Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. We are your hosts, Richard Geiger and Ken Seymour.
Yes, we're here to do things small and talk about things that are tall.
Or at least something to that effect. On any given day, I feel like the theme of the film we're about to review is close to my heart. I guess.
Yes, it can be summed up in a few short words.
Some of them not so nice. Of course, as you already know, we are going to be doing a movie review of The Big Short, released in 2015. Bit of a throwback review. I've been bugging Richard the past year and a half, I think. It's like, we should do
give
this.
Or take, yep.
Yeah. And so he finally relented on an accidental way, and we're going to review it. So I'm excited, I have to say.
Yeah, it showed up on Paramount Plus, actually. Wasn't looking for it. We were continually talking about it, and as I do on a weekly basis, you know, you just kind of go through the apps and you look to see what things that were added or series that may have started. And sure enough, there it was, just added.
Now, of course, I've got this on Blu-ray already in my collection. So luckily I didn't have to wait for a streaming service to renew my memories of what happened in the film. But I'm excited. We're going to do this in a very similar way. Obviously, we're going to start with a spoiler-free review. Then we'll move into the spoiler section where we're going to completely dissect the film into its component parts, or at least the parts that we think that are important and have assigned numerical values to. We're going to talk about the director, the costuming of the props, the location, the score, the cinematography, the plot and writing. Everything's going to add up to a potential score of 100 or as low as 0. Yes, it's good. Now, obviously, in our little spoiler-free version, we can't really say, you need to see this in the theaters, unless you have a time machine, that's not going to happen. But,
That's true, but in terms of spoiler-free, I think everybody knows what happens.
Exactly.
So, no spoilers to really give out, unless, I guess, you weren't paying attention to what was going on 20 years ago.
More often, it's less the not paying attention, more the didn't understand.
That's true.
Yeah. And even with the help of this film, there's still a lot to it. And a lot that they, well, it's any time that you adapt something happened in real life, there are going to be some things that have changed, some names that have changed, or characters that have been merged into other characters or stuff like that. So, you know, this has got that, though not quite so bad as a lot of other films.
I feel like in reading, in trying to figure out exactly, like, what was going on and the whys, because my brain wasn't ready for learning when watching the movie. So when you watch the movie, you learn a lot of things. And what happened is, for me, as I watched it, it took me about 20 minutes to process what I had just seen and be like, oh, okay, now it makes sense. So as I'm seeing later things evolve throughout the movie, I'm trying to figure out what it was based on what had happened before. It takes a little bit of adjustment. It's definitely worth watching again, maybe twice. Just because, I mean, it's a good movie regardless, but to just gather all the details. Now, a lot of the names in here for the actual characters were actually changed,
yes,
but the names of the banks were not.
Correct.
So, there are definitely some, like what you said, some of those liberties taken.
So, you know, just in general, I would say this is definitely worth streaming. If you haven't seen it, I think this is not just worth seeing. I think it's, if you haven't seen it, you're really missing out.
Yeah, because there's no, if you are our age, you know, like 20, it's
right,
good to know what happened a long time ago. So it's good to know as a homeowner how your financial institutions are working, but also the fiscal institutions that are powering the housing market and those financial institutions.
Yeah, definitely so. So we're going to do, we're going to jump into the minutia now. We're going to talk a little bit about the specifics, and we're going to do it just slightly differently. Normally, I lead the charge and say which category to go, but since I kind of strong-armed Richard into watching this, I'll have him pick a category to start with.
Ooh, okay. So if I'm not mistaken, there were a lot of Oscar nominations for this film.
Yes, there were.
And some wins, too. Mm-hmm. But what you get out of this, clearly, is not a... It's not special effects. It's not... It's acting. Like, that's what it is.
100%.
Acting and storytelling. So what you're... What you're doing in this is you're showcasing the people that you have hopefully put in place as the director, as the casting agent, and you've built together, you know, let's be honest, an all-star ensemble. And yeah, even some of the, like, the nonsense bit people that came into it to just do one-off things were awesome as well.
Right.
So let's not do the cast first.
That was too easy. Gotcha.
Yeah, that's too easy. Actually, I'd like to start off on a high note, and then we can, you know, muddle around in some of the other things, and maybe we can end on the cast.
Okay, sounds good to me.
We'll go the opposite direction to an extent. I want to start with something that really stood out, and I have a feeling that one of the reasons that you suggested watching this was the score.
Yes.
So let's start with the score.
That's exactly true. So often we watch films and, you know, there might be a song or two that we recognize in it. A lot of times they want the music to be more background and more of an emotional sort of thing. You know, you got the groundswell for the romantic sections or the tension building things with the whatever. And then occasionally they'll have some sort of pop song or something that you recognize. But considering the nature of the topic of this film and the needs to kind of transport yourself mentally to where it is, I feel that was a decision they made. It's like, hey, we need to put music from kind of that time and have it be front and center, and combine that with some music that gives some big personality pops that may not have been from that time. And because of that, you just get this ridiculous from beginning to end onslaught of stuff that we both know.
And honestly, if you listen to our podcast regularly, some of the discussions that we've had recently pertained to the main songs that you heard throughout this movie.
Yeah.
Speaking, of course, of our top 10 metal artists, and pretty much the majority of the songs that popped, that stood out to me, were all metal songs.
Well, I mean, right? The Michael Burry character listening to heavy metal the entire time is just kind of one of those things. You get a little Mastodon drop in here and there, of course, some Metallica. It's kind of crazy.
Pantera in there. It was a very good variety. Now, I say metal. It wasn't all metal.
No.
But the things that stood out are the metal, because those are not the songs that you see in movies, let alone the ones that are kind of in the forefront in a movie, and in a movie that is an acting powerhouse movie and not an actioner or explosion movie.
Yeah. And you got some of the stuff that you would expect, and you also got some of the stuff that is older that you wouldn't think that they would be able to get their hands on. I mean, the play out is to Led Zeppelin, When the Levee Breaks,
mm-hmm,
which is an amazing song to begin, and it's the exact right song to play at that point.
Yes.
You get some Neil Young in there. You've got, in a very funny bit, got some Guns N' Roses. You've got Khalees. But, you know, one of my favorite was the bringing in of, pardon me, of Ludacris.
Yes. That's what I was going to say.
That was just too much. I mean, because whenever you listen to a lot of rap, what do they rap about? Money.
Money, yes.
This is kind of what this is about, and people's misperception of how it works.
Yeah, to get the whole kind of collection, and you heard it dispersed throughout the movie as well. And when you get songs that you like, of course you're going to enjoy the soundtrack more.
Right.
But I think the thing about it is, when you listen to a lot of these, listen to the song that the collective, the, you know, the director, producer, listen to the songs that they chose for the lyrics, or what is being kind of described throughout the songs of the lyrics and the placement of those songs. Like that's the whole concept of it. You're not just putting the songs in there to elevate the mood. You're actually putting the songs in there to, even to an extent, tell a part of the story. And that's why I thought it was kind of every song just like hit at the right spot.
Yeah. I mean, they could not have gotten the score better. And not just gotten better songs, put them in the right plot points in the film, utilized them in the right way, pulled back when they needed to pull back. It was basically perfect on this one.
Yes, and that is why, out of a 10-point scale, I gave it 10 points.
I did as well. I mean, you can't get any better than that. And that's our movie review.
The end.
All right, so the score. We both love the score. Where do we go from here?
Okay, so why don't we do one that we always save for last as the make or break, and why don't we do the plot next?
Absolutely.
Because the whole reason that we're discussing this movie, the whole reason that we're talking about this movie, the whole reason that there's an interest in this movie is it's based on real events that happened in the market crisis, the housing market crisis. And when everybody's finances just kind of took a poop a while ago, and a lot of people lost their jobs and a lot of people lost their homes. So it's all based on real events, of course, streamlined to be, you know, fit better into a movie, of course. But a lot of the key points were made throughout the movie, which
definitely
is why we should do the plot.
So obviously the plot, because it's based on true events sort of a thing, they had to follow a handful of different groups of people that didn't directly interact with one another, which is always a challenge. And I thought they handled that extremely well as they went from one group to another.
And I love too that a lot of the things discussed in here, you know, as they're telling the story, you got a little bit of narrator overtalk, fourth wall stuff that came in and said like, no, this actually happened. Like, no, it didn't happen like this. But, you know, so you got a few of those elements in there to add to that storytelling.
No, we didn't see the perspective in the lobby of a bank.
Correct. I was like, well, that's awful convenient. And I was like, oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay, cool. But bottom line is, throughout the whole movie, and I still am not clear on all the details of it, but you can break it down by a lot of institutions that are run by money are governed by making money and yes. nothing else.
Yes.
Right? It's not about morals. It's not about doing the right thing or not even necessarily the wrong thing. It's governed by doing the thing that makes the most money, regardless of how or who it affects. And then part of the other basis of the movie too is betting on the economy taking a dump. Like that was
at least one section of it.
One section and profiting off of it.
Yes.
Seeing it before that it happened. And then the other thing about that too is giving you a description on how some wealth within America is made. And of course everything filters down from that, and there's so much more to the plot, but I do like how when they were describing, you know, like how the economy was strong from housing because of how income and debt ratios made sense for people to buy houses after World War II and then beyond. But then some regulations changed or had loopholes in it, and people just exploited the crap out of them. And, you know, I guess to me, when you think about lending money to purchase a property, and if we went somewhere right now to buy a house, we would be so scrutinized on the numbers that we put in and how we purchased it and why we purchased it. But that didn't happen in this time frame, according to the movie.
It was mostly accurate. I mean, the big thing is, like you're talking about, it's a question of motivation. And the motivation when you're trying to make money over everything else, I would say it's not that it's amoral, it's just it's the opposite. It is immoral to focus on that completely. And this movie illustrates how in real life that came to a crashing halt, because ultimately it shows that there's a handful of people, and only a handful of people, that really understand how the markets work. And they went in with knowledge of what would happen and were fully prepared and knew exactly what the reaction would be. And then, you know, they knew they weren't going to be hurt. They knew they couldn't be hurt. That would just be other people that would be hurt. And they were okay with that. And that's kind of where you get that. And just understanding how we sometimes complacently go along with it. Because, you know, at one point, one of the phrases in the film is like, you know, they'll just sign on the dotted line. They just want to get a home. They don't know what they're doing, but they just want a place to live, and those go with the flow. And that was what it was, because if you've ever gone through a home buying process, even before the changes, because there weren't a lot of reforms, there were some, but it's a struggle. It is ridiculous. It is a mountain of paperwork to get through, and there's no way that somebody that is not completely familiar with the process is going to understand what's happening. And the people that are guiding you through that process are not incentivized to help you.
No, they're incentivized to sell you,
Yes.
right?
Yes.
And that's kind of the whole basis of this is, and if you're listening to this podcast and you own a home, or you're paying for a home through a
Right.
mortgage, there's a real strong possibility that your mortgage has changed hands,
Yes.
right?
Mine
I think
has.
that happens to a lot of people, where it goes from one buyer, one bank, to another bank. And what had happened is they were just tossing those around like nothing, right? You know, like
Kind of.
generating those loans, but then selling them to someone else, and then hedging the money off of those, right? It
So
just.
the one thing they didn't explain in the film, and this is the thing that gets me, I really wish that they had kind of gone over this, is understanding who owns the homes and why. The people that you're buying them from. You hit the nail on the head right there, that the people that own the home that you're buying changes hands. And it's because the banks that issue the loans to the people that are buying them do not want them on their books. They are a too slow mechanism to get their money back. They want to get them off their books as fast as possible. And the way to do that were these AA, AAA, BB, BBB things that they put together. So there's tons and tons of these mortgages together that they would sell to venture capital funds and other banks and that sort of a thing, that would buy them, because individually they're not great, but as a group they're profitable. And so they would get their working capital back because of that, and can make money in other ways. And it's just that was what kind of started the whole thing. That's why they were talking about, you know, it several times through the film. It's like, this is the gasoline, this is the match that lit it, this is the bomb. Well, the start is that particular way of collateralized debt obligation, putting that together the way that they did.
And it just kind of ballooned because they illustrated it, and that bubble that was created that burst, but like the individual units that were created, construction of thousands of these, the surface level was the A's, the triple A's, like the ones that had the good rating, and then stuffed way below them were the B's and the subprimes.
Right.
And so you still sold them as a package. But then they even showed that the people that rated these things were incentivized to rate them as high,
right.
high value, right?
Otherwise, these other groups wouldn't buy the CDOs from the banks.
Yep. Or this, if we didn't rate them good, they'd stop paying us money and they'd just go down the street to find someone else, right, that would rate them good, right? So that part was interesting how they would go to the different units that collectively built this structure, from the companies, the businesses that were rating these options, right, and to the actual buyers of the house, the generators of the loans and the mortgages for it too, and you got the perspective of, you know, we're just making money, and how they were describing how they would sell and who they would sell to. And it, like, they were just like, yeah, it didn't really matter. And you could see it. This was part of the acting piece that I enjoyed. You could see it on their faces. They're just like, the realization was there. What was there of, oh my gosh, if this is happening here, this is happening everywhere.
Right.
You could see in the expressions in their face and the look on their face, and just like, oh my gosh, like this is really bad. And then they went to the strip club to talk to the stripper to go over the loan that they they thought.
What do you mean
had.
One loan?
Yeah, what do you mean one? And it was, you know, all the homes and the condo and the boat, I think too. What I can't remember what the saying was, like they're money rich but something broke.
They're cash rich but credit poor.
Yes Yep. And that was I thought that all those details, the fact, and I don't know, I mean, who knows if they really did this, that they actually went to research to see if their money that they're betting on these things failing, they wanted to see that the research or the numbers were actually based in reality.
That part is accurate. So, I mean, they did such a good job of explaining most of it in a layman's term to kind of get you in on the ground floor of understanding where this was going. And that, you know, bringing in the, you know, Anthony Bourdain to explain, you know, bits and pieces of how they changed things around. If they couldn't sell it, they'd change it into something else that they could sell.
Yeah, RIP.
If you didn't leave the first viewing of this film just angry, you watch it again, listen harder. And it's just kind of, it's one of those things, because maybe my only criticism is that they, well, it's not even really a criticism. I don't know if they could have realistically done this, but there were some things that were missed. I don't think that they necessarily conveyed perfectly exactly why the ballooning of the money in the way that it was bad, because, you know, they go over their CDOs and then they go over, I feel like they drop the ball between the CDO, the credit default swaps, which is what the characters are buying, which is essentially insurance. It's insurance on these CDOs that says that if the CDOs fail, then they get paid. But until they do, they have to pay the premiums because it's insurance. So they pay premiums to the banks. So then the guy that they're talking to at the end, towards the end, that's the one that is when they're eating sushi and going over all of that, and they explain how the bets work. Then the synthetic CDO is a collateralized debt obligation. Instead of being houses, it's these credit default swaps that they're taking and putting into pieces, all of the people that are betting against it, and then the people that are betting on those bets. And that it didn't, the first couple times I watched it, it didn't really, that didn't gel. I actually had to go out and research and look. I was like, oh, okay, I finally get it. And but I mean, because it's so complicated.
It is. It's overly complicated. But when they described it as you're betting on a bet.
Right.
Just like, for real? Like
that's our financial system.
Yeah, degenerate gamblers. Okay, like you're betting on a bet. You're a prop bet. You're betting on a bet for a prop bet. It's just,
yes,
like holy cow, just an excuse to move money is what it is, which is unfortunate.
100%. And then the thing is, you know, if the housing market would fail, then the banks that you're making these bets on the other things with, they won't be able to stay solvent. Everything just collapses because everybody thinks the bet's going to go this way, but it's going to go this way. And because of that, there's not enough money to pay off all the investments and everything fails.
Just gone.
Yeah.
Liquidated.
Yeah. It's, and because, you know, those bets are being made by these companies. I mean, we talk about, you know, not on the show because we don't talk finances, but we've talked about 401k and other, you know, things. Some of it's stocks, but some of it's not. Some of it is investments in these other things. So depending upon where the money manager is taking that cash, it can be really, really risky. And it sounds like it's a sure thing, and it's not. So that's the thing that most people, I don't think, understand. And there's the last disconnect, is your life savings is actually a bet.
Yeah. Well, because you don't own your money when you put it in a bank. Right. The bank owns the money.
Right.
And they use that to, you know, give people loans. So if everybody went to the bank at the same time and said, I want all my money, the bank's not going to have that money.
Right.
Is the crazy thing. And the other thing that I didn't get, and it didn't need to be explained because it's an extra layer, but, you know, at the very end, he's like, man, this is the time for us to sell. We got to sell right now. It's like, how much is it worth? You know, $1 billion, blah, 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 blah. Like, hey, that's cool. Who are they selling it to?
Other banks.
Other banks. And the bank is just willing to buy it. Here's $1 billion. There you go. Good. We really, like, why does the bank want
not.
Those?
That's why he's talking about we can get pennies on the dollar. They're not going to get $1 billion because there's not enough capital to do it. So, you know, when you're seeing Brad Pitt's character, getting on a phone while he's in a pub in England, he's trying to find some financial institution or some group that has enough liquidity to be able to buy the credit default swaps at a portion of the value that they're worth, because that would still be worth it to them in terms of a bet, because, you know, they'll get a portion of what they were supposed to get, and the bank, depending upon what they do with it, will either have something that will help them tax ways, or they'll be able to then take the stuff that they now own and get the remainder of the money over time, because they can absorb it over a longer period where a normal individual would not be able to do so.
And, you know, a lot of times the billion-dollar frame was thrown out because it's such a large sum of money collectively for all these loans for homes. But even in that scenario, when he was at the pub, they settled on what, 90 million?
Yeah.
And
just a ton.
Their investment was 30 million, right? Was that what the initial one was?
I think that sounds right. Yeah.
So they tripled their money. It's not like they were hurting.
No.
Right. It's just that their story being told was just a smaller cut of that, you know, gigantic cake that was right. available for everybody to eat from.
But they're going in thinking when they're making these bets, at 10 to 1, 15 to 1, 20 to 1, not understanding at the beginning that the market is not going to be able to support that. So they try and get out what they can. And it's just all of the acting in this film, and we'll get to that, is just great. But the way that they convey all of the ideas, I feel like they do such a good job. And everybody, they were able to dilute the story down to something that could be followed, and kind of give you the script writer's thought process and how they think everything actually ended up.
Yeah, and there's definitely holes. There's holes in time, but a lot of times the holes in time where nothing happened. You're just waiting.
Right.
You're waiting for an event. You're waiting for things to collapse. You're waiting for the value of that money that you had to actually hit the allotment that you were comfortable with before you sold it and got your return on your investment.
The dialogue's great, and it's just very engaging, and the people are very relatable. It's just excellent. All right. Well, before we wax too much on just one single subject, out of 20 points, which is what we get with plot and writing, what did you think?
I gave it, just because, like I said, I'm missing something. I'm not missing it, but I am.
Might take another watch.
Yeah, but it was not in a bad way.
Right.
Just in, like I said, my brain wasn't ready to think. So I did 15. That's a good solid 15 out of 20.
Very nice. I go with a 19.
Ooh, big marks.
I think this is nearly perfect in terms of presentation. All right, so where are we going from plot and writing?
Let's do we'll just go backwards in a certain sense. Let's go to cinematography.
Excellent. So you talked about this a few minutes ago. Not a lot of special effects.
not a need to, right?
Nope.
That helps balance things in terms of a budget, because if you're going to pay the superstars to be in the movie, but you don't have to have, you know, explosions and weird things going on, the balance works out.
Oh yeah.
So the cinematography in this one is more, you're focused on the shot of them talking, and then it goes from outside of them talking in the room to outside of the room, looking from the glass inside, as you're trying to show a silent conveyance of the feelings or the attitudes, because you've moved from them talking with sound to them further distance away talking without sound, and looking at like the gestures and the manipulations of people going throughout there. So those little cuts and twists, I think, were sharp. You had the steady cam, but not the bouncy cam.
No, right? Exactly.
So, and there's definitely a difference. And you talk about that when there is the bouncy cam.
I hate the bouncy cam.
There wasn't a need for it. There rarely is, but there wasn't a need for it in this film. So you just got a nice steady view. And see, the thing about it is, the director, which we'll get to, if you think about a lot of the work that this director did, it's comedy, right?
Yes.
And I think after you watch this, it's worth revisiting the comedy, because I bet the cinematography is just as sharp.
Yeah.
But the cinematography makes the things that are funny on the screen, it takes them from like a B+ to an A-, right? Or
right.
Like an A to an A+, just because of how the things are filmed. And I think that's what you get out of this too, is if there needs to be tension, you don't have to do it with the soundtrack. You can do it with good acting, and the screen presenting that actor in the proper look, color, angle of things. And
definitely,
I think this is conveyed very well in this movie.
Well, and since this film is just a lot of talking primarily, and not just talking, but talking about very dry subjects, you kind of need to do anything that you can do to keep the visual interest of the person watching the film. And being able to change those camera angles and take them out, and when people are in similar areas, again, I go back to that restaurant scene, because you got two different tables. You got the main table where they're actually talking about what's going on with the money manager, and then everybody else is at that other table watching what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're going kind of back and forth between that, giving you an idea of the general feeling. And there are some quick cuts to add in that tension, because it gives you that feeling, especially when they're starting to talk about the more technical aspects. They will cut in the middle of those sentences to another section of the scene. And I feel like that's on purpose to kind of get you uncomfortable with increasingly uncomfortable and understanding that there's something wrong and I'm not getting everything and what is going on here. Another way that they get that emotional payoff is, you know, they're talking about the brother that ends up killing himself. And when they're going over that particular time as he's talking to his wife about it, and you know, when something was wrong, he just offered him money. But the camera angle is at his ankles, slightly off center. You know, just the way that they present that gives you that feeling of wrongness, that something is off. And, you know, it's just they do a lot with the camera in this to keep the story going, and it's just done really, really well.
Yeah, and going back to the plot, that was one of the things that I felt was important, and they had talked about it, but when they were delving into it more, it was in a weird spot. Yeah. You know, like what, why are we discussing this now? It just seemed awkward.
No, it's the exact right point, because so you were asking, you know, and we were talking earlier about do we sell, and he doesn't want to sell, and that's kind of, that is the ethical center of that character. That's the ethical debate, because ultimately, yes, is it about money? Do you want to make money? You made a bet on something failing. But more than anything, you want the people that are responsible for this whole catastrophe to pay. They need to be held to consequences. And if they sell...
Which they weren't.
If they sell, then they're not, A, not going to be held to consequences, and B, you kind of become part of the problem. So when you're looking at it that way and how money takes everything and twists it, then that's what brings him back to that moment, because his answer wasn't to connect emotionally. It was to offer money.
Yeah, and that part I got. It was just the intersection of the storytelling. Not that it seemed out of place. It just seemed... It told the story that it needed to tell. I don't know. It was just a weird thing when I'm watching this and all the things that were going on. And then that seemed like it was on an island. It's hard to describe.
It's possible they just didn't know it was a good place to put it.
Nitpicking, because that's what we do. But
Yes. That's the whole point. That's half the fun of this whole show.
Pick it apart.
That's right. So, but to me, I didn't have any problems with that particular issue. So I thought the cinematography, it wasn't perfect, because it still had some jerkiness and some things. But out of 15, I still thought it was a 13.
I was very similar. I did 12.
Yeah. All right. So you want to go backwards. Does that mean we talk about the score again? Or we're going to locations?
Location sounds terrific. Because there's right. not, I mean, you were in buildings.
Well, yes, you were, but you also were in strip clubs, and you were in casinos, and you were in these kind of, when you're talking about them looking through and trying to figure out if what was going on was real or not, and they take that trip down to Florida and start going around to all the homes.
Knocking on the homes, yep.
And going inside and seeing it's like Chernobyl down there and finding alligators in the pool. And just kind of...
Well, that's what I was thinking, too, is like, has this pool been abandoned for a while and all the chemicals are now gone in it? Because an alligator wouldn't be hanging out in there if there were chemicals. That's where my brain went in that, of all the things.
Yeah, but, that makes sense.
But you're right. I mean, honestly, you can go down to some subdivisions in Florida right now and it's more vibrant, but there's just a lot of homes that are empty because they build, and they're just not getting purchased right now. But this was more blatant than that, is they had built all the homes and people had lived there. And then they got the boot. It's not that people weren't buying the homes.
They couldn't pay for it anymore.
They couldn't pay for them anymore. And, it really hits the point, especially because it was Florida, where they do talk to someone who was actually home, and he's like, "Oh, did my landlord not pay the mortgage?" I was like, "Oh, dang." Because
Right?
I that's that that's it. He had like that he's got no control over that.
No.
I've
You're
seen
telling
that
me my
before.
landlord filled out the form in his dog's name?
Exactly. Yes. So there were some, just things that I realized that, if you're in a certain spot, you'll get offers for your house from people like, "We'll pay in cash." I'm like, "Well, why do you want the house?" "Oh, so you can rent it." "Okay,
Right.
gotcha." Do an Airbnb or something and, double up what the actual mortgage is.
You get to go to a convention floor for that sort of thing. You're at a gun range at a different point. You get to go into the aftermath of the trading floor of one of the banks that just gets shut down, that giant stack of Red Bull cans.
A gigantic stack of Red Bull cans.
So, I mean, I felt while I mean, we're not going to get a spaceship or some fantastical anything, what we did get is just an amazing array of lots of different places.
With 2000s themes too,
Right.
right? So those things were appropriately littered with the random things that you would have seen in an office at a time. And actually, it made me think of over my lifetime of doing things, how little I remember from that time frame.
Right.
Because, before that could have been school, high school, college, post college, but then like right in that time frame, was just a time that, I remember a lot of people losing their jobs and not having money and things crashing and stuff like that. But we came in to buy a house where at the time Obama was president, and he gave you that new home credit, right?
Yeah.
Because everything had tanked. And they wanted people to get back into purchasing
They
homes.
had to reestablish the foundation.
Yep. So they would give you a tax credit for purchasing a home. So that was the post era of that crash.
Right.
Well, the beginnings of it anyway.
Right.
But
But
I just don't remember. Yeah, it's a weird time.
I mean, because of that, for me, out of a 10, again, since there's not a lot to talk about the locations, they went not only to where they needed to go to, but just freaking everywhere. Resorts by the pool, you got to see a little bit of everything. And for me, on a film like this, to do this, where literally you could have been in like four offices and then not gone anywhere else, maybe some street shots,
Yeah.
that's a 10 to me.
I still gave it an 8. So I still gave it a very positive score.
He's explained. No, I still liked it. It was still good.
Yeah. Didn't max it out with the 10. I'm
Right, right,
sorry.
right. No. There may be some bias from my side of things. All right, costuming and props. Again, no spacesuits and no fantasy gear, just all 2000s stuff, right?
No spacesuits or fantasy stuff, but there were some fantastic suits.
Yes, fantastic suits. We got to see one guy that was dressed in leaves at one point, drinking a beer. That every time I watch the film, that always just it stands out to me. He seems to be having a fantastic time as they're filming this. But yeah, some just basic stuff. But again, you get a lot of it.
Yeah, and all of the phones the people were using, it would have been Blackberries, right?
Right.
So, they're giving the little conference and everybody's just getting updates via things on their phones. I'm like, yeah, that's what would happen right now. Just would be different phones delivering more information in a slightly different way, but it's the same concept. So when I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, like I could see that absolutely 100% happening. And the phones that they're on, I was like, look at that. Like, oh yeah, that's gotta be a BlackBerry. Everybody would have had a BlackBerry at that point in time.
Yeah. If you're in the business world, you had to have it because everybody had it.
Yeah.
To me, we don't have to stick on this one real long. To me, that's a 9 out of 10.
I did 8.
You know, that's understandable. I think that's a fair score.
Fair score is right.
All right, so that leaves only 2 categories. We're ending on cast. That means we got to go into the director. You're talking Ooh. About this guy being primarily a comedy guy, right?
Generalizing, of course, but what people who don't know who he is might at least initially give credence to some of the movies that he has directed because you'd recognize him from comedies. Maybe I'm thinking more like producer and writer too, but
yeah.
From a directing standpoint, Whew. His stuff is, you know, pretty streamlined.
Well, pretty awesome. I mean, talking about doing the Anchorman films and doing Talladega Nights and Step Brothers, Eastbound and Down. I mean, I watched Don't Look Up. That was a great film. I still haven't seen Vice. I've heard good things about it. But, you know, it seems like pretty much whatever he touches turns to gold.
That's correct. So one of the things that I did read on here is, you know, obviously he's got a lot of exposure in a lot of his films with you know, I guess with Anchorman and Talladega Nights and you know, you see a commonality with Will Ferrell in there.
Right.
And it's not bad to have that person on your team making funny stuff, right? it makes you look pretty good.
Yeah.
But you know, he evolved a little bit starting with this one, right? With The Big Short. And then some episodes of Succession and then Vice. So maybe he's had his way, had his fill, and now he's conquered the comedy realm, and now it's time for that more.
He's doing the Stone Temple Pilots thing where he goes to a second album and switches it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I did not go into watching this film originally realizing who the director was. This is one of those I just kind of ran into when I first watched it. So I had no preconceptions going into it, other than it seemed to be on a topic that I found interesting with actors that I liked. Even if I had known who directed this going in, it would just gotten me more excited.
Yeah. Good track record of success.
Yeah.
Give him a chance to do stuff. Studio's going to give him money to make the things that he needs to make. So, all he had to do was get an absurd cast.
Right.
Go from there.
And I tell you what, the editing in this was just on point. The transitions from scene to scene, like I said, since you have to go from 3 completely different groups of people simultaneously and being able to tie all of that together and keeping the storyline flowing, especially as you kind of divert temporarily into Margot Robbie explaining something or, you know, somebody else explaining something else. It is all really, really tight, and everybody seems to be on the same page, which is really, really impressive.
And what you said with the editing, it's crucial to delivering a congruent story.
Yeah. And it's always good. I mean, all of his films, the editing is good. I mean, again, you're talking about a lot of times when you're looking at comedies, you're not thinking about that, but you got to have the right timing. Comedy is about timing, and if you don't have good editing, then the timing's going to be off. And so, yeah. I mean, he's always got that.
that escalated quickly. I mean, just, obviously, if you look at that shot, he's got the high life and he's, you know, it's a wide shot in a closed area. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's the cinematography piece, but it's the editing and just the simple cuts, right? You don't have to do anything crazy.
No, you don't.
You know, he goes to like, I think I killed a guy, you know, like just it, put the things together. So he's obviously got a good mind in terms of presenting, but he's got to have a good team of editors to give the presentation of what he is really looking for on here. And of course he's got to be sitting in that editing booth too, going over those things, but it's to put together something like this is what, 2 hours long.
Yeah.
And you're right. All those different sequences that you've got to match up, be congruent, but be their own separate entities. Cause you know, what were the amount of stories that he told here. So he had the Christian Bale character telling the story, and there was a couple little branches from his story too. Right.
Steve Carroll.
Yep. And of course his group intersected with Ryan Gosling.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brad Pitt was a secondary character, even though he's gets a lot of billing in this, right? Because he's Brad Pitt, his face is on the cover, but he was really a secondary character, a major player on one of the story arcs, but really a secondary character in terms of screen time compared to everyone else that was on here.
Right. Was it Rafe Spall? Was that? No, that's not right. I'm trying to remember I'm having one of those mental moments where I need to go to the second group or the third group of people. And it's one of those things where everything is just, no, it's right. Rafe Spall. So, I mean, the third group that you have is also just great. I mean, when those are major actors and compared to everybody else, they're like B-listers.
Oh gosh, yeah.
It's like that is an insane cast.
And I really like, I think I mentioned this already, we have the main body of the cast, but even when they go to some of these little sequences and that character, that actor is going to be in the sequence for 30 seconds or they're going to be on screen for a total of 2 minutes, they got great faces for that. Max right. Greenfield showing up in there, right?
There it is. Finn Wittrich and John Magaro. Those are the ones that played Charlie and Jamie. I just had that mental moment. It finally came back to me.
Yeah, it's clear that, you know, we're not on the cast, even though we're talking about the cast, but the director and producers had to choose the cast,
right,
to who be in the right places at the right time. And so kudos to the team for putting together a solid squad.
Yeah. Yeah. But as far as the director goes, I think he had you, if you knew him going in, you would have to have high expectations and he exceeded them on this. I'm maybe again biased, but 15 out of 15 for me.
It's gonna be a high score for you. 13.
Very nice. And then of course we'll end up with the cast that we've already started talking about. I mean, there's no no weak part.
Yeah, and it's an actor showcase, right? So let the actors do the work and showcase and present them how they're supposed to be presented, and everybody wins. And you know, the cast is stupid good.
You bring in Karen Gillan for one scene at a pool.
At a pool, yep.
It's like, what?
The fact that you see the big bodies and faces and they have the screen time and that part I totally get. But all of like the bit parts in some of these things. The one that was the Jared Vanett, Ryan Gosling's character, his like assistant.
Yeah.
Right?
It was great. That was who I misnamed the first time.
So that character is just a one-off, right? It's just maybe even an afterthought in a certain sense, but that presentation and the two play off of each other really, really well. So I'm sold on those characters, but like that secondary character, where they're in the group together. And I'm awful with names anyway, but it's like the Steve Carell character. He's got his group in there, and like the real like aggressive.
Oh, Mark Baum. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like his aggressive partner that's in that with him, like his character stood out to me, right? The one's always chewing gum.
Yeah. Oh, and he's great. And he took that to go in. Well, he was in Succession, wasn't he?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yep. So that, I liked his part in the show. And like I said, the Max Greenfield one, he's the one who is, as a person who enjoys New Girl, he plays that character well in this, you know, the person who is the selling all the mortgages.
Yeah.
And then he's got his partner, the, you know, the like, two bros just talking it up about how much money they make. Like, yeah, yeah, that, yes, that makes sense.
We know people like that.
Yes, we do.
Sadly.
The portrayal of the character type was correct. Let's just
it was eerie and sad at the same time. A little scary. Oh, man.
The fact that you got Marissa Tomei to show up in there also.
Just nuts.
No shortage of quality human beings doing their craft in a top-notch function.
Yeah. I don't know if this is the perfect cast, but it's about as close to it as you can get if it's not.
And with the actual cast, so here's the thing that I get out of this cast. Was I absolutely blown away by anyone's performance in this? No. But did I believe everybody? Was I sucked in by their performance to what they're presenting? Yes, absolutely.
But I also think that the reason that that happened is because you got so many people with such talent. It wasn't that they weren't giving the amazing performance. It's that when you have 9 people giving an amazing performance, no one stands out.
Yeah, there is that. There is that as well. And I don't know who these people were in real life. I'm only seeing by how they are being portrayed on screen by these, you know, world-class actors and actresses.
Much more interesting on this side of it.
Yeah. And do I believe Christian Bale as that character? Yes. Was I enthralled by it? No.
The
Steve Carell character, did I believe it? Yes. Was I, like I said, the facial expressions and some of the things when he's talking to people, like, oh my God, like the realization of the, oh my God, this is the position that we're in.
Yeah.
You know, like to be conveyed with, you know, the bad haircut that he had in it, which is
fairly accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So to be able to convey that with expressions and body language, I think is top tier. And Ryan Gosling's good in like everything that he does, right?
Yeah. He's going to be hosting SNL this week.
Ooh.
As of this recording, it's going to be him and Chris Stapleton as the musical guest.
And he's been on there a couple times, I think.
Yeah.
And even Brad Pitt's character, which Brad Pitt can play the straight man just fine.
Yeah.
He was fine. Like, once again, he didn't stand out by any stretch of the imagination,
No.
but maybe it was the bad wig, I think, but
Well, again, I think that was on purpose because while he's a big name, he is not the one we should be paying attention to. He's there to forward the plot and to kind of do, because, he was part of this, but we need to not look on him so much as the other people involved, and only until he describes exactly why their good thing is actually a bad thing.
Well, the other thing too is maybe he did have a wig in real life, and that was just his disguise.
That one I'm not so sure about. I've seen most of the people that were in this film in real life, and they're pretty close. Obviously much more attractive because it's Hollywood.
Because it's Hollywood,
But
yes.
it is what it is. Well, what's that out of 20 for you, this casting?
18.
All right. So that's a 19 for me. All right. So we are to our point where we get to fudge the numbers. Bonus points of any kind, positive or negative. Do you have anything?
No, I really appreciated seeing, like I said, artists like, because you can see Ludacris in plenty of other projects, and you can see Metallica in some projects, but not many. But to have a Pantera show up, like little things like that. I didn't give any bonus points, but I gave the score a 10. So
Yeah,
like
exactly.
it was already built into the score. So no bonus points, let's say, for me.
Well, I do actually have something this time, and this is to kind of compensate for some of the bias that I have, because we all have that thing that we like to watch,
Oh, yeah.
or the thing that really plays to us, and this sort of a thing that it's emotion heavy, it's real world, but it's relatable, and it shows how we fail as a people and a society, makes it very clear, makes it so that we can learn, but I know we won't.
No.
That's kind of like right down my alley of how my cynical side of my brain works. So for that reason, I gave it 2 points in bonus points because it just hits me right the way that I want to. I've seen this film actually many times now.
You're just trying to get it to like your highest score on the scorecard.
Well, it's not that I'm trying to get it there. It's already there. I just have to justify it. I have to explain why. So that's, dear listener, if you ever wondered how at least I do these scores, I know where it is. I know the end result. And then I dissect everything and I say, okay, this is the score here. This is the score here. When the two numbers don't add up, I have to
Yeah,
figure out, well,
you gotta
why?
fudge them.
Well, no,
You gotta
it's
fudge them.
not even just fudging. So I figure out why. It's like, what am I missing? And if I'm missing, I change the numbers. Or if I'm not missing, if there's something that doesn't fall into the categories, that's where my bonus points come from.
Yeah, I really like the scroll at the end of the picture. It was great. So I'm gonna give a one bonus.
You are a goofball, but we love you anyway. Well, that brings you to a respectable, two together, 84 points. That's a solid B. For me, that puts it at 97. And yes, that is the highest scoring film that I've done at this point. But everybody has one. You've got 95 on Infinity War, so it's just kind of
Good stuff.
we all got our spot, and this one's definitely mine. But what do you think, dear listeners? Where does this sit on your list of films? Have you seen it? If not, what's wrong with you? Go see this film, and then tell us what you think.
Yes, streaming now on Paramount Plus.
That's right. You can definitely see it. And then next week we'll be coming back with an interview. It's been a little while since we've had an interview with an interesting individual. So we are going to be having an actress that is, I don't want to call it acting royalty, but in some respects, it's kind of like that, descended from some very, very important acting individuals. We are going to be talking to Nina Bergman. But until then, just have some fun. Watch some films. Watch the new Fallout that just dropped yesterday as of this recording.
Amazing. Amazing.
We're going to talk about that coming up too, for sure. But until next time.